This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Thanks for joining us for this second instalment of our look at the songs and poems of Ireland's revolutionary decades in the early 20th century. This programme will feature songs and poems dealing with the rise of nationalism and the volunteer movement, written by Brian O'Higgins, Maeve Kavanagh and Peter Golden, among others, and to perform them we'll be joined by Maureen Ní Chronaín, Fergus Russell, Derry Farrell and Barry Gleason. While the Irish language nowadays has legal status but not much practical recognition, under British rule it had neither, and Irish speaking was not countenanced by the legal apparatus of the police or the courts. Brian O'Higgins satirises the situation in the song The Limb of the Law, which was a favourite of Frank Hart's and one which his granddaughter Siobhan now sings. For Irish speakers, the humour is increased by the speaker, a struggling policeman, mistranslating all the Irish phrases into the directly opposite meaning.
You can tell by my feet I'm a limb of the law. The people of Dublin for me have no gra. They hiss me and boo me when I pass them by. Sinn Féin up the rebels, you'll hear them all cry. Now you may think that's bad, but there's one thing that's worse. This grand Irish language on my soul 'tis a curse. With their yibberdin and yabberdin like an old ass's bray. The castle expects me to know what they say. With a comb of roan, you hear them all say, on digging to May, and Sinn Féin hooray. Is Doylem go Willis, is Doylem not gay, Octame eg foulum on Gaelga. I've a friend in the force and he's courting a cook, and what do you know, but she bought him a book, with Irish on this side and English on that, so small I could carry it round in my hat. First learn the letters and then the whole phrase. I'll have it all off in a couple of days. Then the yibberdin and yabberdin I'll soon understand. Such larnification will stagger the land. A comb of roan, you hear them all say, on digging to May, and Sinn Féin hooray. Is Doylem go Will, is Doylem not gay, Octame eg foulum on Gaelga. This book I procured and to learn I must try, and will May means are you, and will two means am I. Is Doylem I think that I do understand, my love is my foot and my loose is my hand. Tommy Egg Foulum I'm learning, you see, if I keep on like this an inspector I'll be. I'm getting so big that I don't know the cat. My head is two sizes too large for my hat. A comb of roan, you hear them all say, on digging to May, and Sinn Féin hooray. Is Doylem go Willis, is Doylem not gay, Octame eg foulum on Gaelga. With larnification I'm bloody near dead. I lie on the floor, 'cause I can't lie in bed. I'm walking and talking when I'm fast asleep. When I hear up the rebels, my flesh starts to creep. My friends have all left me, I've now just a few. I'm walking around like a wandering Jew. A comb of roan, you hear them all say, on digging to May, and Sinn Féin hooray. Is Doylem go Willis, is Doylem not gay, Octame eg foulum on Gaelga.
The Irish-born, USA-based writer Peter Golden devoted his life to the cause of Irish nationalism and political separation from Britain. This poem, Send Us, O Lord, the Revolution, appears to be a response to the outbreak of war in 1914 and urges Irishmen not to support Britain in her struggle. It's going to be read now by Fergus Russell.
Perish the thought and perish those who such a feeling now would foster. Our country will not sink so low, whatever treasure it may cost her. We did not unto England yield when on her noon the sun was shining, and oh, we shall not do so now, when all her glory is declining. What to that emperor do we owe, that we to save her now should gather? Go ask of all our countless dead, why we should not destroy it rather. God shield us from contributing to the foul thing's continuation, but may he send us soon instead the crash of its annihilation. No compromise must be our cry, no sign of wavering must we show them, until we have paid back the debt, the awful, awful debt we owe them. The conflict must be carried on, though into dust each sword would shiver, until our race stands forth again, redeemed, enfranchised and delivered. Small difference it makes to us which British party robs our nation. We're fighting for a holier cause, we're fighting for our liberation. There's just one way, and only one, to free us from the whole pollution, and to regain our nationhood, and that one way is revolution. You may decry it all you will, and any way you wish to boo it, but if you'd wish the strife be done, there is no other way to do it. Humanity, since time began, has had its every right resented, till its demands were made by men, and on a rightful point presented. Divide and conquer was the cry, since first our hordes appeared upon us. Divide and conquer is the cry that has today almost undone us. And now again by fraud and guile our lines they're seeking to dissever. Oh men, they must be stricken down, nor let them rule our land forever. Brothers, the spirit of the brave intend today on bending o'er us, and oh, our motherland to save, with what appealings they implore us. Let not our ranks, united now, by party voices be invaded, and if we fight and have to fall, let us die gloriously as they did. Those who long by Alec's halls in readiness have been remaining, have sensed the struggle from afar, and at their leash their steeds are straining. Give us, O God, in this our day, of all our centuried strife to fruition, the march, the muster, the array. Send us, O God, the revolution.
That's great, Fergus. That was written by a man called Peter Golden, a cousin of Terence McSweeney, who seems to have spent all his life in America organising and recruiting for Irish nationalism. And from the text, it seems as if he wrote this at the beginning of the First World War, when it seemed to a lot of people as if the British Empire was going down in the trenches of France and Belgium. Did it strike you like that?
Yeah, well, it's very much in the vein of the Bolsheviks' belief that there was going to be a worldwide revolution, and that the First World War, that the Great War, was going to be the catalyst for that great upheaval in the world. And you can see it was a surprise to me that he spent his whole life, that Golding spent his whole life in America, because the sentiment in the song is really the sentiment, again, of Larkin and of Connolly. The type of wording in it is, it's almost a prayer. And it just, the expressions in it could come from the handbook of Irish nationalism, as well as from the international communist movement who were trying to overthrow the entire world order.
Thanks, Fergus. In response to unionist importation of guns and military organising to resist Home Rule, the Irish Volunteers were founded in 1913 and proceeded to emulate the anti-Home Rule unionist organisations by drilling and by importing arms. These efforts were supported and encouraged by Irish nationalists in America. Notable among these was Peter Golden, a cousin of Terence McSweeney, who had emigrated to the USA in 1901 and spent his time in activities in support of the separatist movement in Ireland. His collection of verse, Ballads of Rebellion, was published in 1914 and includes the following item, What Are You Going to Do About It?, clearly written just after the outbreak of the European War. Barry, you're going to sing a poem, that is to say you've put an air to this poem that was written at the beginning of the First World War when Britain was trying to inveigle Irish men to get into the trenches on their behalf. Would you tell me what you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's very inspiring. Now, when you say that I put an air to it, it was a traditional air, so I didn't compose the air. But when I started reading it first, I just thought, jeepers, I should go with Wear the Breeches, a song that Frank Hart used to sing. And it seems to have fitted in quite well. Peter Golden, wasn't it, who wrote it?
That's right.
Yeah, it's a strong piece, I think. Yes, we're conspiring, as ye claim, to save our kin across the water from being led forth in England's van and sent into the shambles slaughter. We're putting rifles in their hands to use whatever time they'll need 'em. Since when has it become a crime, America, to arm for freedom? Time was within your own domain when in the balance freedom trembled. The exiled children of the gay around you to a man assembled. Nor was there found in that long roll one who disloyal was or traitor, nor have I heard that they were then assigned the name of agitator. Our people's safety's at stake, the British desperately need 'em. Out on the battlefields of France, there to the cannon's mouth to feed 'em. By every means within their power, the men of Ireland will oppose it, and we'll uphold them to the end, nor do we give a damn who knows it. And may success be on their side, and may the God of battle speed 'em, who'll arm when, where, and how they can to fight again for Ireland's freedom. So let us send the fiat forth, that no man for a moment doubt it. We're with our people to the end. What are you going to do about it?
Despite the fact that Maeve Kavanagh was centrally involved in the independence struggle before and after the Rising, she seems to have been airbrushed out of the history of the period and does not feature in any of the recently published histories, even those with a focus on the women's involvement. James Connolly referred to her as the poetess of the Revolution, and she seems to have been an intimate friend of his. She wrote pieces for the radical press of the day, and it seems that hardly a month went by without one of her inflammatory poems appearing. They usually took the form of calls for rebellion, with titles like At the Crossroads, Awaiting the Signal, Opportunity, Straining at the Leash, or the one you're about to hear, Outward Bound. With the outbreak of the war, she wrote pieces praising Germany and German arms, such as Ireland's Overture to Germany in 1916, or Ireland to Germany the previous year, a piece which James Connolly referred to as a piece of verse calculated to make the red blood hot in the veins of every true lover of freedom in Ireland. And he added, we had it in type for publication when the competent military authority swooped down upon us and suppressed us.
Moored in the river still we lie, though fair the wind and still the sky. We wait the siren's last shrill sound, the good ship Ireland outward bound o'er that wild sway insurgency to seek the port of liberty. The tide is full, why wait we here? Is there no fearless one to steer? The rest of crew their orders wait to put to sea and challenge fate. Of little use their seaman's lore if they must only hug the shore. Ah, sweep the frightened ones aside, or we shall miss this glorious tide. Put them ashore, to plot and play, for the men who will act, gangway, or else the gallant ship will stay to rot in port till black doomsday.
Thanks very much for that, Maura. A poem called Outward Bound? By Maeve Kavanagh. And Maeve Kavanagh was the woman that Connolly described as the poetess of the revolution. She had a poem like this almost every week in the radical press before the rising, kind of challenging the volunteers and the nationalists to do something, do something, do something. Had you heard of Maeve Kavanagh before?
Yes, but not. I wouldn't have known an awful lot about her. I wouldn't have known about her, but yeah, I'd heard her name all right, and I heard of her as the poetess of the revolution. But again, wouldn't have had seen many of her poems, actually.
Yeah, she was the sister of Ernest Kavanagh, who was the great cartoonist, and she was married to Cathal MacDougall, who also wrote poems and songs of a radical nature. So they certainly had a big footprint in the time, but Maeve Kavanagh seems to have been completely forgotten in the subsequent history of the period. She doesn't feature in any of the modern books about the rising.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, it wouldn't be the first time women have been airbrushed out, I'm afraid. It doesn't come as a huge surprise to any of us. I suppose, look, you know, if you're trying to get your point across, there's lots of different ways to do it, and they do need people to sit down and, you know, kind of come up with stuff like this, because I think, you know, a rhyming couplet will stick in your head where, you know, it's like it's a sound bite, you know, they needed sound bites just as much as we say people today use them. So I can see where that was probably, you know, it was a very valuable thing if you have somebody who will actually just sit there and, you know, work on something and have one ready for every edition of the paper. It's great, because it's slow work. That kind of writing is slow work. It's, and you know, you generally want it to be right, and you want it to be good when it goes out. So, you know,
it's a nice thing to remember too, that verse was considered important back then, and it influenced people.
Yeah, and I can see where again, I suppose the idea of the soundbite or something that sticks in your head, an earworm, can be quite effective, you know. I mean, they still use them for selling toothpaste. So, you know, of course they're going to use them for selling freedom and liberty and all those things. So, yeah, no, of course it was important, and probably still so. I don't know if people are influenced by it the same way today that they maybe would have been 100 years ago, but I mean, if you look at the stuff, some of the stuff we're still singing today is 100 years old. If it's good, it lasts, it stands the test of time.
Exactly. Thanks, Maura. Next, we're going to have Antoine O'Farrakhan singing Constant Dropping, Where's the Stone? This, again, was a poem written by John Fitzgerald back in the 1860s about, and published in 1862. My friend Sandy Purcell has provided an air for this.
Little things have mighty power. Insects form the coral reef. Stone on stone builds up the tower. Seedlings come to bow and leaf. Grains of sand hem in the ocean, where its wild waves high are thrown. Trifles keep the earth in motion. Constant dropping, where's the stone? Trifles keep the earth in motion. Constant dropping, where's the stone? Cast thy bread upon the waters, 'twill return in many days. If you help God's sons and daughters wandering in life's weary ways. Little deeds, when good, are splendid, leaving you by God's bright throne. When your life on earth has ended, constant dropping, where's the stone? When your life on earth has ended, constant dropping, where's the stone? Leaf on leaf in autumn breaking, leaves the forest brown and sere. Wave on wave mid seabirds shrieking, hues the sea caves dark and drear. Little clouds give timely warning ere the tempest blast has blown. Little trifles bear not scorning, constant dropping wears the stone. Little trifles bear not scorning, constant dropping wears the stone. Little pens, if tipped with fire, cause the revolution shock. Little blows that never tire, fell the oak and blast the rock. Little steps ascend the mountain, little wings long leagues have flown. Little drops fill up the fountain, constant dropping wears the stone. Little drops fill up the fountain, constant dropping wears the stone. Little leaks cause ships to founder, little sparks explode the mine. Little men, if they surround her, make their land in honor shine. Little stream, let swell the river, little notes on trumpets blown. Sound the charge where squadrons quiver, constant dropping wears the stone. Sound the charge where squadrons quiver, constant dropping wears the stone. Little wrongs seem mean and trifling, yet they all mount up in time. Though a land its wrath be stifling, some day it bursts sublime. Step by step you go, the people, till yourself like grass are mown. And the tocsin shakes the steeple, constant dropping wears the stone. And the tocsin shakes the steeple, constant dropping wears the stone. There's a small chain girds the world, where the sun gets up or sinks. Bent and strained and downward hurtled, tiny shamrocks form its links. Yet it keeps us all united, till a nation we have grown. Wrong shall someday be requited, constant dropping wears the stone. Wrong shall someday be requited, constant dropping wears the stone.
That was great, Anson. You did a great job on that song, and I know it's one that you've never come across before. I asked you to sing it. It was published in 1862, and I think it gives a clear view of nationalist feeling at quite an early stage in the 19th century. How did it strike you?
Well, you're the expert on the research part of it. If it's published in 1862, it means that these kind of sentiments are going on around that time. And like when you hear things like little pens if tipped with fire caused the revolution shock, it does illustrate as well how people can be, incited to rise up against oppression. Another nice bit in it is where, you know, he mentions, like, step by step you go the people till yourself like grass or mown. So, like, you're pushing your luck, lads, you're getting a warning, stop messing about with us, something's going to happen. So it's a little bit kind of, it foretells the future to an extent as well, which is quite interesting, you know.
That's right. It's kind of builds on the work of the Young Irelanders in the 1840s when they were using verse themselves to try and go the people into taking up arms.
Well, I wouldn't use goad there. I'd say incite or inspire. Goad is when you're being oppressed and you're mistreating us. So personally, I'd be quite happy to stand up against oppression. But the other thing about it, it does remind me of another song. There was a song that I learned from Mary Walsh in Tulla. She lived down near Tulla in County Clare, pulling hard against the stream. And it's a little bit like that. It's kind of about helping your brother and sister, and if they're having a hard time, and you can kind of, we can all help each other kind of thing. There's sentiments like that in this song as well, you know, which are attractive to me, I suppose. But the constant dropping, where's the stone? Some of my ancestors as well were stone cutters. So the idea of chipping away at the empire, which my granduncle Thomas Farron did, they were stone cutters and they chipped away at the British Empire in small little ways. That has a resonance there for me in this song.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Thank you for listening to Programme 2 of The Indignant Muse, dealing with the rise of nationalism. I hope that the pieces we chose gave you some insights into the political currents in Irish life in the early 20th century. Next time, we'll be focusing on the issue of class struggle and labour agitation. We'll have more great songs and poems with Manus O'Riordan, Antoine O'Farrachon and Fergus Russell joining us to deliver them.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.